Hello all you evil hacksaws. Welcome to RFA number 62 with your hosts Dual Parallel and Stank Dog. That Stank Dog rocks or is my socks or is.
And Dual Parallel makes me wet.
Security alert, all decks.
After very careful consideration, sir, I've come to the conclusion that your system sucks.
Hey, I don't believe that any system is totally secure.
Remember, hacking is more than just a crime.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
That I need to know, and I need to know now.
You are listening to Radio Free America.
Next message.
Hey, Duel, what up? It's Flip. Just calling about the show. I sent you an email too, but I know you probably get a billion emails, so you gotta sift through those. But give me a call back on myself, and definitely up for doing the show Wednesday. See ya. Bye.
End of message. To erase this message, press 7. To save it, press 9.
Welcome to Radio Freak America number 62. I am Duel. I am joined this week. This week is extra special because Stank is back. Welcome back, Stank.
Well, thank you for having me back.
I wish I had the Welcome Back Carter theme music, you know, one of my favorite songs, but I don't this week. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. And I also have, from the famous In the Now show, Slip Mode. What's up, Slip?
How's it going, everybody?
Slip, do not confuse this Slip with Slippin' Away, the artist who was on one of the much earlier episodes. Slip is here. Now, let me preface everything. In the Now is a great show that you can find at slipnet.org. And please correct me if I screw anything up. And I am mirroring each month's episode on oldschoolfreak.com. Grab them at slipnet.org or oldschoolfreak.com. You'll see it'll be on the news page, and you'll just each episode will be, you know, I keep a month's worth of news up there, right? So each episode will be up there for a month. Now, I heard, might there be some changes? I don't know if you want to talk about that, Slip, but can we give a little, you know, a little extra, you know, a little juice to the everybody checking out the show right now?
Certainly. Well, the show is much like the Radio Freak America show, except, of course, we have different people that are on the show, so it always brings different things. We are more of a hacking-related, political-related, even though there's some politicalness on this show. But we do quite a few interesting things there. We're monthly. We are moving to bi-weekly, so we're going to do it every other week. The only thing about that, I'm hoping that everything pulls off well, is getting all my cast of characters to show up for those shows. But I think we can do it, and I think it's going to be a good thing, and we're going to give more for the audience to listen to during the month.
That's the scoop. That's the scoop I wanted. Now, bi-weekly, okay, I'm sure monthly is a lot of work. Bi-weekly is going to be a lot more work. And how many people do you have on the show regularly?
Regularly we have four people.
And they're all down with this biweekly thing. I mean, that's twice as much work. And they're all down with that?
They're down with it. I think we can pull it off.
Nice. Well, I can't wait. I will keep archiving each episode. And then, let's see. Yeah, I can put two up a month. That'd be no problem.
Hit that.
We'll keep doing that. Because you're actually pretty popular. Very popular. In fact, you're on the audio.textfiles.com mirror.
Yeah, I checked that out. And actually, I'm really glad because... let's just say if my site goes down in 5 years, you know, I don't think it is. I don't have any plans. But I have a feeling that textfiles.com and audio.textfiles.com is going to be around for quite a long time. And that's going to be really neat that, let's just say, you know, 20 years from now and I stumble upon my shows again, even though I probably have them on my own, like a CD I'll keep, people will still be able to listen to it. And I know that your show is there as well. This show is there as well. And it's a great place.
Yeah, we are immortalized. That's a little ego boost, isn't it? I mean, straight up. I mean, let's not kid anybody here. That's good for the ego. There's no doubt.
Definitely, I think it's awesome. And I met the guy that does the does that website. He was at DEF CON 7, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really amazed that he went back and archived all those text files and BBSs from the 80s and late 80s and early 90s. I think it's a great site.
Yeah, and you know what? This brings up a point here that. Okay, he's got all these old text files, right? Why the hell is he going to archive all this stuff from the BBS days, right? And I let me tie this in here. Somebody else wrote, I forgot where I read it, you know, I think everybody should date their text files, right? Make sure there's a date, excuse me, so you know what you're reading. Is it old? It's not crappy, whatever. Well, personally, I don't equate old with useless. Even if, you know, even if it's an old text file, right, you find out it's old, it still might be worth reading.
Definitely.
You know, you can learn something new from it. You can build upon it. It can give you new ideas. And if it's crappy, you know, start skimming it and toss it, right? You can move on. That's part of, you know, part of hacking. You know, it's straight up, it's like research. You have to learn how to research. And that is sifting through the information. And whether it's dated or not, it could be useful. Okay, that's a little side note there. Now, I know Slip from the, you don't mind me saying this, right, where I know you from?
No.
Okay, the Arizona 2600 meetings, and they are great meetings, and they've improved immensely. When I first started going, it was, you know, me, Racks, and Condors, a few people. I'm sure there were lots before, you know, at the Peter Piper and stuff. I never went to those. But I know Slip from the Arizona 2600 meetings, and this last meeting was just awesome. Why was it so awesome? Because I brought Ben Rev, right? I brought 10 copies.
Woo-hoo!
And yeah, hell yeah. And they sold out, man. They sold out. It was awesome. We had a giveaway. I gave away some prizes. I gave away a freak notebook complete with calling card, size 32 rubber band, and a pen. I also gave away a tone dialer and then an awesome refrigerator magnet, which is a giant Quest magnet that I have found somewhere. And it was just great. It was awesome. Thank you to everybody who bought the magazine. I hope you enjoy it. I think they did. Did you get one, Slip?
Yes, I did.
And you digging it?
Yeah, I dig it. There's a lot of good information in there. I really enjoyed the layout. Logan Five does a great job.
Oh, yes.
Definitely, though.
Oh, dude, he's amazing.
It's awesome. Yeah, I really appreciate it, and I'm glad that there's more of that out there.
Yeah, well, I hope that people who got the magazine dig it. Let us know.
Ordering. The orders have been coming in through the site.
Great.
We just put it up a couple days ago. And I've been putting in RFA stickers into as many as I have left. I think I've got maybe 20 or 30 RFA stickers left. I've been putting one into the orders I get until I run out. So hurry up and get your orders in, and you'll get a little bonus in there.
Very nice. What I want to do is ask people, especially those who get the magazine, to send in their articles. You know, we had to do it all DDP, the first one, naturally. What I want now is I want people to share in it, and I want it to, you know, the magazine, I want them to be a part of the magazine. And I think Ben Rev is a great, great opportunity for the community, right? Not just for each person who gets their article published in Ben Rev, but it's a great opportunity for the community to increase readership, to increase the knowledge base. And again, it's not competition for 2600. This is, you know, it's supplemental. It's because personally, there's not enough information like that. I like stuff in my hands, right? I read about where can I get free tutorials on the web for this programming language. Well, that's all good, fine, and dandy. But personally, I like to have a book in my hands, like something that I can lay next to my box. I can flip through, stick my finger on, you know, earmark stuff, highlight. You know, I like books. And I think this magazine is a great opportunity to get hacking and freaking information into paper and into people's hands.
And, you know, I've already started, I already got a few things lined up, a few articles that I've kind of tagged for the next issue of BenRev, and they are exactly that kind of thing. I'm really happy with some of the submissions I've got so far. By all means, keep sending them in. I'm getting great stuff. But I'm really looking forward to this next one being exactly what you described. It's going to be the kind of thing that you crack that baby open and sit there and set it beside your computer and try some of the stuff that you see this time. We're going to have some code examples. Nick's Pearl Corner was really good in the first issue. We got, you know, the Hacking 101 series, which, you know, kind of does some walkthrough stuff and teaches people from the ground up. So, this second issue, I'm hoping to even further take it in that direction where we have things that people can, well, play along with, I guess, if for lack of a better phrase, but they can play along at home, you know?
Exactly. And like me and Meme, read it on the can, baby. Hell yeah.
Well, you know, one of the reasons why I like to get magazines like that or 2600 is I like the hacker artwork. I like the underground scene. I like the text files. Everything that Stank Dog was just talking about. Those things, once again, are kind of like the textfiles.com. As you keep them and hold them over time, you're going to want to go back and pick one of those up and read it, and it's going to be a great read no matter when, if it just came out or if it's just a year old, because there's always so much interesting information that are packed in those magazines.
Oh, yeah, and like, you know, and it's almost like a feeling, you know? It is a feeling, right? I got this freaking underground hacking freaking magazine. I'm the shit, you know? It's like, it is. It's just a great feeling, and I want everybody sharing it. Stank, how was your meeting, by the way?
Well, actually, I went to the Broward meeting, which 954 represent. Shout out to all the guys down there. We actually had people show up this time. I think I just happened to go on a couple bad months, a bad streak there where people were unable to get there because of work, et cetera, which, you know, it's understandable. It happens to everyone. So,
sure.
I actually hooked up with some of the guys in email, and we met down there. I think there was 7 or 8 of us down there this time, which was, you know, up quite a bit from zero.
That's a good turnout.
But that's a very good thing, and they obviously do still have that meeting. They knew each other, and, you know, everybody was hanging around talking. They were very friendly to me coming in for the first time because, as the listeners know, I've never been the meetings kind of guy. I don't play well with others in general, so myself. But I listened to the stories of how, what great meetings you guys have in Chicago and New York, so I decided to check it out, and I actually had a really good time down there, talked about a lot of different things, a lot of different topics. It was very informal, which I liked. Hopefully that'll keep up. A couple of the guys there actually mentioned that they were interested in maybe submitting some articles. So
yes,
that'll come through. So again, shout outs 954 represent, baby.
Hell yeah! Well, good. I'm glad you had a good meeting. Yeah, we're very lucky. Arizona meetings just rock. Phoenix meetings are the shit. Before I get to my favorite section of the show, I want to pimp a little something. You know, if you listen to last week's show, we talked about balance on the show. We talked about, you know, technology and art and, you know, how we're going to do things on Radio Freak America. And guess what? Radio Freak America, as everything in life, is going to grow and change constantly. So next week, we are going to have a new section of the show. It's going to give a little balance to the show. We'll always have, you know, we'll always have the BS, you know, we'll always have the stuff we're talking about, the things that are, you know, close to our hearts, being art, you know, being music, whatever, games, anime. We'll keep touching on this stuff. Politics, of course, digitalrights.org. But next week, we're going to have something that's going to add to that. Definitely add to that. So check out next week's show. Also, before I get to my favorite part, I know you know what it is. I want to give Slip the opportunity to give you a taste of what's on his show. His show, right, you know, this show, Radio Freak America, we talk about dumb stuff, right? I do, anyways. Phones, right? Talking to people, social engineering. Oh, come on, please. Well, Slip Show.
Interesting duel.
Well, thank you very much. Slip Show is, dude, highly, highly intelligent stuff, all right? I talk to Slip at the meetings. I know what I'm talking about. The dude is smart. So we're going to give you a taste right now of what is on in the now. Specifically, what'd you call it? Exploit Corner, what was it?
It's the Exploits Corner.
Oh, nice.
That we're going to start doing it at In the Now.
So what are the famous exploits this week?
Well, these are a few exploits that have been around for about a month, month and a half. Well, let's put it this way. Common things that run on your Linux box. Common things that run on a Linux box is Sendmail. Another common thing that runs on Linux boxes is Samba. For people that are just learning Linux, but they still want to have access to their Windows files, maybe on another Windows machine in their network, they use Samba to connect to their Windows machine. Another thing that people use a lot is a kernel, obviously, because that's what keeps your Linux machine going. For the last month and a half, there's been mass exploitation, and it's quite underground that it's been happening, but there's been mass exploitation of the Sendmail server, the Samba server, and the ptrace exploit in most Linux kernels, which is 2.2 through 2.4. What right now I'm going to do is I'm going to make a few suggestions on what you can do to stay away from those types of baddies going out and getting into your box through those holes. One thing that you can do, definitely, is not run any of those things, right, except for the kernel.
Yeah.
Well, there is alternatives to Sendmail. Right now I'll say that you can patch Sendmail, go to sendmail.org and grab the newest Sendmail, or if you have a certain distribution, usually they have a system for updating their versions of Sendmail or tell you what packages on your machine that you need to have updated, like Red Hat or Gentoo or any of the popular distributions out there. Go out, grab it, install it right away. The other thing you can do is you can supplement Sendmail by not using it and going out and using another mail server. Qmail is a good one. It's a very good one. And you can also go out and get PostFix. PostFix is also a very good mail server. What you can do about the Samba one, obviously there's not really an alternative to Samba, so what you can do is you can go out to Samba's website, which is samba.org, I believe, and you can go out and download the newest version of Samba or go out and grab it from your updates from one of your distributions. And then the last one that we're talking about, the ptrace one, there are patches out there for this ptrace exploit. You can get that patch and apply it to your kernel. They're in various places. I think it's a lot easier if you go out and upgrade to the newest kernel that your distribution offers. If you do that, it's going to most likely block that patch or block that exploit. The ptrace exploit actually is a local exploit. The user has to have an account on your machine in order to exploit that. The Samba one and Mail one are actually remote, so they could do that from their own house, which is not good for you. A few other small exploits I'll mention is that there's one for the Qpopper, which that's a pop server that you can attach to PostFix. So if you're using PostFix, be careful if you use Qpopper as your pop server, because they do have a local root exploit for that. There's also a local root exploit for Real Server. I know I used to run the In the Now show off of Real Server and stream it out until my bandwidth got totally sucked up and I had to stop using it. But definitely if you see that happening, you need to go out to the vendor site and grab the newest code that they have. Another thing you can do to limit yourself from exploits hitting your box is to limit the services that are run on your box and stay up to date by subscribing to BugTrack, which is at securityfocus.com, or the security mailing list for your distribution.
Wow. That is so cool, dude. That is so cool. Man, I wish. That would be so nice to have that every week. Well, you can get that bi-weekly at In the Now, slipnet.org. That is so cool. Now, I use one of my distros I use a few. I use Mandrake, Mandrake 9. You know, I know it's a kiddie distro, but I'm really digging it, and I just start trying it out. It's cool. And its update feature works great. I've used a few, of course, app updates. Date on Debian Box. I've used the SUSE's U. I've used Red Hat, which sucks ass.
Yeah, now you have to pay for it. It used to be
free. Well, that's nice. Yeah, that really increases its value for me. So I've done that. I've used those. I think I can handle updates on Linux boxes pretty well. I've got a FreeBSD laptop. It's not really on the net. I just use it for war driving. But if I was to update that, are there any utilities that I can run, like apt-get, to update a FreeBSD box?
I've run FreeBSD in the past, and I run NetBSD now. Basically, for NetBSD, which I'm sure is the same for FreeBSD as far as this goes, is I just stay abreast by being on their security mailing list. Usually that will tell you what's going on right away, and they'll tell you inside those mails usually where to get the patch for it. I do not know of an update system for FreeBSD or any of the BSDs per se. I know I'm more of a Linux user, but I have used FreeBSD for FreeBSD and NetBSD for a while. So excuse me if I don't have the if there is one out there and I don't know about it, there may be. But I know for sure that you can get on their security lists and stay abreast of that, and then you just go out and get the new packages, because they're all package-based. Get the new packages and download those and install on your computer.
Great advice. I didn't mean to put you on the spot there, but that is some awesome, awesome advice. Well, check that out. In the now, slipnet.org. I really appreciate it, man. That is just, dude, I wish.
I appreciate you having me. I really enjoyed the show, and actually I feel honored to participate and give my side of things for the show here.
Dude, that is so nice. You know why? Because, you know, all I want to talk about is dumb freaking... Come on.
Andy, need a little help.
Get crapped out on me. See, I can't even get a personal... What is this? I can't even get a digital video recorder to work. All right, let me try this again. Great segue. All right, here we go. I did it! Freak news, baby. Hell yeah. All
right.
The freak news tonight. First, I've got an email from Inverse ARP. He says, Duel, I was just listening to RFA 60 and loving it, and heard about your interest in Frame Relay ATM. The books we use at my local community college are by Cisco Press. They have some awesome stuff. You might be interested in this book. CCNP Cisco Networking Academy Program Remote Access Study Guide. The ISBN number is 1587130289. Although they are somewhat pricey, I feel that the information is worth it. If you have any questions, please feel free to email me. Thanks, Inverse ARP. Thank you very much for that tip. I know Cisco has a lot of good stuff, a lot of documentation for high-end networking technologies. Unfortunately, I don't have the money for all that kind of stuff, but I will continue to learn and research it regardless. And again, I like books, man. I want to have a book in front of me. It's great, you know, it's nice to have free information on the web, but man, nothing beats a book. It's just like, I'm like addicted to books.
Look, if anyone would like, they could email me, and I have a username and password at Cisco. It's nothing that's circumventing or illegal in any way, but it basically allows you to get into more of their areas of documentation that they just don't have. They have a little bit up for the public, but they actually have a lot more. Anybody can email me at slipmode@quest.net. I'll give out that username and password. That's actually helped me out a lot because their documentation on their sites was limited, and I needed... a friend of mine clued me into that, and that helped me out a lot.
Whoa, nice. Another great resource from Slip. Okay, continuing the freak news, I got some freak news from some weird places this week, and one, I kind of dig games, right? I'm into gaming. It's kind of fun. Oh, actually, I finally beat that first girl in, what's it called, Racket on my Nokia phone. Hell yeah. I am late. 21-6, dude. It was awesome. Of course, it's glorified Pong, but... for simple minds like mine, I enjoyed it. I picked up GamePro Magazine, the latest issue, and there's actually a supplement called Wireless Wisdom, and it details all of the new modern color big screen phones that play games, from the Samsung A500 to the Motorola T720. And what's that?
Yeah, buddy.
Oh, yeah. You got the...
represent.
You got the 720i, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, with the camera. I don't know if this has a camera, but it's got a big screen. I think it's a super hang-on, one of my faves on the screen. Awesome phones.
It's Moto GT. That's the one that comes with the phone.
Oh, it comes with it. You played it.
Yeah, that's the only one that came with my phone. I unfortunately haven't had time to look more into it, but I got that same supplement was in... I don't know who the publisher of GamePro. I get Computer Gaming World and PC Gamer, and one of those two had the same section that you're talking about in there.
Yeah, it's very cool. I mean, something really cool to include in basically a console and PC game magazine. It's great. It's got great information. It talks about the providers and what kind of access plans they have and the additional cost to do. Do some gaming, and at the end it has, oh, not quite the end, almost at the end, it has playing some games, and they review some games. There's actually, it looks like an RPG, Lord of the Rings. Of course, Monkey Ball, one of my faves. Prince of Persia, got some 5-0, Q-Bert, some old school stuff.
Oh, they have Monkey Ball in there?
Dude, yeah. It's not. Of course, it's not the, you know, the 3D like on the GameCube, but it's got Monkey Ball. Sega's big into this. A lot of these games are Sega games. Now, the end talks about the Nokia Engage. I believe we've actually talked about it, and it's really cool. It's supposedly going to be the Game Boy Advance killer. It's basically the same form factor as the Game Boy Advance, but it's a phone. It's got a big screen. It's everything. I believe it's an MP3 player as well. I would like one of these devices. I really like Nokia technology, and this just looks awesome, and the screen looks great. I mean, they show a screenshot of a 3D, we're talking rendered polygons, snowboarding game. I don't know if that's, you know, advertising or realism, but we will see. Let's see, the cost on this thing, $537, so a little pricey. But that is the future of gaming on phones, a little gaming and freak news smashed together. Hey, you got your gaming and my freaking. Wireless Wisdom, check out one of those magazines. Just, you know, rip it open and read it. And also, I got a little freak news. It's actually almost privacy news, but to me, man, it is freak news because it deals with phones. Silencing the Ring in my local newspaper. This article talks about the National Do Not Call List and, more importantly, the Direct Marketing Association Telephone Preference Service. And this is what's funny. They show this guy's real Frederick P. Clark. They use his whole name. He like wants privacy. He signed up for all this stuff to not get junk mail. Then he gives his whole name and the city he lives in the magazine. I don't get that. Anyways, the New York the New York City-based Direct Marketing Association launched the Telephone Preference Service, a Do Not Call List, in 1985. The mail preference service dates back to 1971. So it talks about these two lists. You know, I'm sure you've heard in the news about the Do Not Call List going through the legislature right now. But this one has been around for quite a while, and apparently from this gentleman's testimony, it is quite effective. At present, 29 states have either established or are setting up Do Not Call Lists. So your state may have a Do Not Call List already. Next, on the same page, believe it or not, recorded messages are illegal and hard to stop. I did not know that recorded messages are illegal. For a while, I was getting a slew of recorded messages, right? Bunch of, you know, crappy bad English accents, you know, come and get a free gift. I even got some of these, quote, illegal messages from politicians during election time. Did you guys know that was illegal?
Yeah, actually, it was really weird because there was a few times where I've had wanted to record people, and I've talked to my friends about it, and they said, you know what, they actually have to know that you're recording them before you record them. And I was like, well, how do you get somebody to say something without letting them know that you're recording it? You know, and I think there may be some grayness to it, but yeah, I did hear that. I think it's really strange.
Yeah, that I know that's illegal. You can't record people without their knowledge. By the way, we're recording, Slip. And the federal, here it is, the federal law prohibiting pre-recorded calls. This means calls to you, you answer the phone, and it's a recording, right? Or you get it on your answering machine. The federal law prohibiting pre-recorded calls said it shall be unlawful for any person within the United States to make any call other than a call made for emergency purposes or made with the prior, with the prior express consent of the called party using any automatic telephone dialing system or an artificial or pre-recorded voice to a residence. I did not know that. Now I see what you're saying. Okay, so you have to have their consent. Yeah, how the heck do you do that?
Well, I'm wondering if they somehow infer automatic consent by the answering of a answering machine.
That's a good point.
You know, if your answering machine picks up, does that constitute automatic consent? Because I don't get a lot of, honestly, I don't get a lot of recorded messages. What happens is when you pick up the phone, if there is a live human voice, the computer will switch you to an operator. You get that pause, that hesitation while somebody, you know, picks up the phone.
Right.
And if they detect an answering machine, then they go to the automatic voice recording. Now, I come home all the time, people want to sell me shingles and roofing, and I'm like, I live in a condo, dork ball. Don't you do some research in your data mining before you call me? But I think that when they call the answering machine, it must constitute automatic recording.
That is so strange. I don't know. Maybe that's why it's so great. Maybe that's why it's so hard to enforce. I didn't read that. Son of a gun. Express consent of the called party. Yeah, well, I might research this a little more. I'm actually very interested in that. I mean, you could just do that at random. I mean, you can just call, play a recording to somebody. Who knows? Yeah? You totally harass them, right? And, it's legal. They answered the phone. I could do this, right?
Suspect.
Yeah. Well, what you just said a minute ago, too, I was kind of wondering one time, you know what you said, you have to notify them about you're recording them before you can use it, you know, without their consent. That's what's illegal. But when you notify them that you're recording them, of course, they're not going to talk because they know they're being recorded. And, you know, those tech support numbers or any 800 number or companies you call have that little disclaimer that says calls may be monitored and recorded for training purposes.
Right.
That's how they get around that.
Right.
But I was thinking of possibly using the Dale Gribble method at home, where I answer the phone and say, hello, thank you for calling Stank Dog, your call may be recorded, and then put that up front. People will take it as a joke, people will take it as a, you know, being silly or whatever, but as soon as they start talking, technically I have notified them that I'm recording their call. And I think that may be a legal loophole that you can get through to be able to record calls.
Yeah.
I don't know if it would stand up in court. Don't, you know, hold me to that. But
right.
That sounds like if they've got that gray area, we should have that gray area, too.
And I think you mentioned, too, that what if you know, they call and your answering machine picks up, and then you actually pick up after that, and that maybe be a little bit more obscure way of letting them know that they're being recorded, but they may think that you turned off the answering machine, and you go to court, and you say, oh, I totally forgot that I turned it off, but hey, I didn't turn it off, but hey, they said this, and I want to use it against them, you know?
Yeah, that's a very interesting...
Because the answering machine went on, you know?
Yeah.
That's an interesting point, and I wonder if also, just very simply, can you what if they do leave a message on your answering machine? Can you legally use that against them?
I believe that, because they're consenting to have their voice recorded in your machine that's in your ownership.
Yes.
If it's automatic consent for us to accept it, it should be automatic consent for when they leave it also, but I wonder if they have a loophole to get them out of stuff like that.
Well, we're assuming that it's automatic consent, that if it picks up,
right,
we're saying, yes, please play me the recording. And yes, I believe that they're definitely giving up their consent to have this automatic dialer spew their crap on my answering machine. Okay, very nice. And if you go to jail, Stank, for recording people, man, I'll send you issues of BinRap, dude. No conjugal visits, though. I'm sorry.
Uh-oh.
All right. Okay, next, a website. Yes, it's been a long time since I had a freak website. This website, now I'm actually, you know, believe it or not, I haven't really gotten much into the cell phones, you know. Like, I wrote that crappy little Altel article basically because I was pissed at Altel because they suck ass, and I wanted people to explore all of their technology. But this site really looks pretty cool. It's called, and I love the name, ringtonerfest.com. Again, like Oktoberfest, this one is ringtonerfest.com, and it's all about American Nokia phones. Codes, tones, graphics, bunch of stuff. Check it out. They've got forums. It looks like a really, really good site. I haven't delved into it deeply, but I think it's pretty cool. Again, ringtonerfest.com. Finally, now here's where I shine. I mean, straight up. You know, I'm like talking, trying to sound smart. It's a bunch of crap. You know what I'm about, baby? Old school tech. Scrounging to swap meets, going to electronic surplus, making projects out of a bunch of junk, you know, putting stuff together. That's where the fun is. I went to, after I went to the meeting in Phoenix this last weekend, I went to an awesome swap meet. It's one at 55th and Glendale, Slip, if you're ever around there. Great stuff, great computer stuff, way better than the one at the dog track.
Okay.
Yeah, very cool. I got, first of all, very elite, here it is. I got a coupler for free. That's right, RJ11. I said, hey, how much for this? You know, she said, oh, I'll take it. And I'm right on. So I got a coupler for free. Very good for your modular boxes. I got a line switch. Perfect for, where is it? Aha. Perfect for party boxes. Great stuff. A one-touch line switch. I don't know if Radio Shack carries these anymore. I think they're discontinued. But the best, and that cost me a whopping, those two items cost me a whopping $3. And with the next item, I spent a whole $4, baby. That's right. The last item cost me $1. Un dollare. I got, oh, it's so freaking cool. I wish you could see this, but it's radio, so you can't. A GTE Linear 2 phone. Big freaking deal, you say? Yes, it is. It is the coolest phone. The keypad is not your regular 3x4. It's all in one line across the bottom of the phone. The handset sits sideways, perpendicular to you as you face the phone. And the keypad is all in one line, star pound and then 1 through 0 along the bottom of the handset. It is so cool. It works great. And it's just a cool phone to have, man. It's like a part of history. Let me give you a model number here. I don't have one. Oh, well, anyway. Oh, I guess that would be it. The GTE Linear 2, a very cool phone. Would make a good base box, but very cool to have in the lab. So I dig that kind of stuff. I've been making a lot of other projects, as you listened to on the past show. You know, I got inspired, and I've been throwing stuff together, you know. So really dig that. If you're a freak, you don't want to spend a lot. That, you know what? That's what freaking is about. Read Kuroshi's, his ghetto-ass beige box article. That is the epitome of freaking and hacking, mind you.
I read that last night.
Isn't that great?
Isn't that, yeah?
Isn't that awesome? That is, of course, it's what hacking is about, right? Making do with what you have or don't have. But that is just the epitome of freaking, man. You want to, you know, you want to make a call. You want to explore technology. You've only got a few parts. You got to scrounge. You don't want to spend any money. You got to put stuff together. You want to solve problems for people, right? With a phone, I can solve problems for free, right? It's amazing. That is what freaking is about. So read that article. Check out the GTE Linear 2 phone. Find a picture of it on the web. It's the coolest phone. I really dig it.
But there's
that. What's that?
One place that it's only happens yearly, and I'm sure you've seen it before as well. You know, if you go to places like DEF CON or the conferences that Emmanuel throws, the H2K and H2K2 and, you know, the Hackers on Planet Earth conferences, there's usually a guy that'll bring a whole bunch of, you know, some people might call it junk, but you can find some really, really neat stuff at these cons.
Oh, yeah, I love that kind of stuff. That's what swap meets are good for. You got to find the good ones, right? Swap meets, electronic surplus. I know I pimp that stuff a lot, but it's a great, great resource for hackers and freaks. That is, believe it or not, the freak news. Oh, I got it to work. I'm a genius. Okay, now we're going to do a little PS in here. I want to bring up some retail hacking.
Well, actually, since Slipmo brought it up, we've kind of been kicking around the idea of maybe going to DEF CON this year.
Yeah.
And you've been to a couple of them, Slipmo?
Yeah, I've been to 6, 7, 8. I've been to H2K2, H2K. I'll be going to DEF CON this year, definitely.
Really?
Usually go to the, if there isn't a HOPE conference, then I'll go to DEF CON. But if there is a HOPE conference, I'll go to a HOPE conference.
Well, they would have announced it by now if there was going to be a HOPE conference, right?
Yeah, I guess they did it really sporadically, like every 4 years, but now he's doing it every other year. So I think this is the off year, and then hopefully he'll be doing one next year.
So, and you say if you had the choice, you would go to the H2K4 over the DEF CON the same year?
Yeah. You know what? I think that DEF CON's a great conference, and it really is, and they have good speakers. I know it's become like a really big party atmosphere. And I noticed that at the HOPE conferences, when I've been there, especially it's cool to see New York, it's kind of more of the old school way of mind at the HOPE conferences. It's definitely more hobbyist there versus more a party atmosphere. And I enjoy that a little bit better.
I think I would as well. I've never been to DEF CON. Been to one HOPE conference, and I loved it. Yeah, New York is awesome, by the way. Great city. Always alive. And, yeah, I really did that feel. I mean, Cheshire Catalyst, would he go to DEF CON? I don't know. DEF CON's more like, you know, cracking, computer security kind of stuff, right? The black hats around there, if I'm correct. Yeah, I'd rather have the, you know, people doing pirate broadcasting and freaking and just having fun, you know, everything from, and the, you know, from a MAME box, you know, and an old school network, and, you know, I don't really need nor want the party atmosphere. I've done my party.
Yeah, like, it's really neat. The last one, the H2K2 when Cheshire Catalyst was there, and a few others, they had a panel where they talked about things that they did with old, you know, computers like Apple and stuff like that, and I really enjoy that because I'm more of the, not like the black hat party per se, like I owns you and everybody you know. It's more like, and I'm not saying all the DEF CONs like that, but I do like more of the hobbyist end because, I mean, when I started out on computers, it was back, you know, during the Commodore 64 age, and I was hooked, you know. So that, to me, is where I'm at, where my interests lie.
Very nice. I think that's good advice for everybody. That'll help you weigh your options in case you do have the opportunity to go to both.
Yeah, and there's a thread on the forums, thankdog.com forums, where we have been, some people have been kicking the idea, trying to find out who's going, who might be and might not be going. So I am still considering it myself. So if anybody's interested, is listening, please go to the forums and drop in a note, and let's see who might be going in lieu of there being No Hope Conference this year. I'm really strongly considering, and I've never been to Las Vegas either. So like you said, it's great to see New York. Well, I'd like to check out Las Vegas one time. So, I'm really thinking of going to that one this year and then hitting Hope next year.
Yeah. Freak Adventures in Vegas, baby. Yeah, maybe we can arrange that. That would be awesome.
Yeah, and the cons are a great way because I've never met Stank in person. You know, I can hang out with Stank, and there's other people on the Internet, too, that I've talked to and said, hey, you know, we don't get to fly to each other's houses because that's really not something that's going to likely happen. But, you know, come meet up at the con, and we'll hang out and have some fun.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Well, Dual flies down every Wednesday, and we record the show.
That's right. Right, after my caviar and single malt scotch dinner.
We take the private jet, and we go, you know,
yeah,
on the world. But
yeah.
Other than that, I don't leave the house.
Right. All my talk about the swap meets and freaking electronic surplus, I'm flying every week. Yeah. Okay, I want to talk some, one of my favorite things, retail hacking. First of all, Kinko's, and who brought this up? The Kodak kiosk? Well, guess what? Yeah, the Kinko's I went to Print Bin Rev. I went up, asked a guy, hey, what's your store number? He told me, walked right over to the kiosk, sure shit, that was the password. Of course, they realized what I was doing and changed promptly. Next time I was in there, it was not the same password. Now, to move on to a bigger subject, and one of the largest retailer in the world, that is Walmart. First, a little side note here, advertising, right? You think advertising will be everywhere, all right? No matter what you think, no matter where you go, it's going to be freaking holograms, it's going to be beamed into your head, whatever. They have been sticking advertising, basically they're big, like, you know, cardboard or paper, you know, wraps, you know, and they just stick them right over the EAS portals. It's a new way to advertise. The first time I've ever seen it. They got Matrix and some other video game, and they just stick it right over the EAS sensors, dude. Unbelievable. Get used to it. Next, their kiosks. I went and checked out the Walmart photo kiosk, and there was no password. You would think in a big store like that, there would be a password at least, even if it was a store number, 1234. No password, wide open. Kind of sick. Very sick.
That was Walmart that I had brought up a few weeks back, the same photo kiosk.
Yeah.
Mine was the store number, and you're telling me yours had nothing. So
nothing.
It's obviously a store-by-store, case-by-case basis, and it sounds like so far all of them suck.
Yeah, everybody, man. Those kiosks are wide open, man. Totally wide open. Next, the registry kiosks. I think we've talked about those in the past. Well, now they have a new thing because of the war.
The spam kiosk?
The what?
Did you say the spam kiosk?
Did I say registry equals spam? Possibly.
Absolutely.
That's right. Because of the war, you can now send email messages to our troops overseas. And I forgot the name of the website that's sponsoring it, but you can go in and, of course, put in a fake name, I mean your real name, and then type a pre-canned, actually you select a pre-canned message, is that right?
They have a list of, on mine anyway, I'm interested to see what yours is, if yours was the same, but I think mine had, I think it was 40 pre-canned messages.
Yeah, I believe so.
It did have a spot of type your own message.
Oh, it did? I didn't see that.
List, and it has a little keyboard on there you can type in and say pretty much anything. It's a free text. I don't know what the limit was. I just typed in, I sent somebody a message that says DDP was here, but I figured that would cheer the troops up pretty good.
Yeah.
I sent that out just to see if it would go, and it did.
Oh, of course.
That was kind of surprising.
So, yeah, shouts to all the lead hacksaws overseas.
Yep.
So, yeah, so go ahead and send a message to the troops. I wonder where it goes, right? I mean, does it go to some central mail server that the DOD owns? Or, you know, I'm really curious. And there's also, and again, there's a website that's associated with it that probably sponsors it. So check out that website as well.
Well, you know, speaking along the same conspiracy theory, does it go anywhere?
Yeah, who knows? Maybe it's just like,
Does that ever get to the troops? Or is that, you know, I hate to say it, but that could be Walmart just fronting to look like they're supporting the troops and look like they're supporting, you know, whatever. That could just be a front.
What's that, Slip?
I'm a bin kiosk.
Yes, that's right. They're freaking terrorists, man. It's some kind of placebo to make all the shoppers spend more money because we support the troops. You never know. You never know. Because you don't know, right? So you just go in like the sheep you are and buy your groceries and your tires and your fake wood furniture and send messages to the troops. Okay, last.
Well, wait, before you get off that too far, the more fun part of that.
It is now.
And the reason that I jokingly call that the spam kiosk is not just the sending the message to troops. Also on the same kiosk, at least at mine, there was another option from the main menu that had nothing to do with sending spam to the troops. It would let you sign up for Walmart mailing list. They will happily send you email, advertisements, weekly specials, and localized news for you. And you can put in your email address, and you can have wonderful Walmart email sent to you. You can voluntarily join up to this mailing list.
I'm going
to
go down right after the show and sign up.
Sweet!
I signed up, too. I accidentally mistyped my email address and sent it to someone else.
Oh, no.
Ready?
Oh, no.
Yeah, so that's why I am the spammer of the year, I guess. But, hey, can I give myself the fuck nut of the month award?
Yeah, please do.
I don't know if I can do that.
What happened to Dick something of the week or whatever? Anyways, dude, that is terrible. You're going to miss out on all that great Walmart news.
I know. Maybe I have to go back and resubscribe myself.
Yeah, I might as well do the same. I love Walmart. Okay, the last thing, and I've always wanted to mess with these things, right? Those scanners, those NCR scanners, right? That tan, that 90s tan, beige scanner, it's got the green LED, or is it LED display. Basically, they're hanging on posts, right? They're hanging on columns all throughout the store. They've got a little antenna. Of course, they're speaking wirelessly to computers. And usually, the 120 is on the same pole, right? I'm about 6 foot tall. I could just reach right up, oddly enough, and unplug it, and plug it back in. And it is a blast to watch. Those things go through a shitload of diagnostics. You're going to see a lot of great messages. It goes really fast. It goes too fast for me to write stuff down, otherwise I would.
Well, you can reboot it two or three times.
Yeah, exactly. You stroll around the store, right, grab your freaking, your Hello Kitty tennis shoes, and then walk to another, spot and, get your Timex quartz watch and then unplug the one near the watches. Yeah, do it. It's a lot of fun. Check it out. Dude, is Walmart... I just banged my elbows on the table, by the way. Do you guys get where I'm going? Isn't Walmart just the freaking craziest, nuttiest thing you've ever seen? They actually built, and I'm sorry to say I've been in it, one of those super freaking city places, Walmart stores freaking hell near my house. It's nuts. That should not exist. It's like
the one-stop shop.
Oh yeah, but it's like this disgusting, seething mass of consumerism. It's like Cthulhu, gone mad in a mall. It's just really weird. I mean, am I freaking out about nothing? I walk in there and I look at this expanse, this football field expanse of things and stuff, and it freaks me out.
Well, Walmart, I don't know if you guys know, or you might know, most of their stuff is produced from cheap labor, sweat labor from over in Mexico, and they pay them really dirt cheap. And then they send the products to all these Walmarts, and then you buy them for just a little bit less than the competitor.
Right. Yeah, instead of $7.99, it's $7.88 or $7.44, something like that. Yeah. And wow, no way. That really surprises me that they would do that.
I got to step up a little bit in defense of Wally World here. Walmart changed. Walmart changed when the original founder, Sam Walton, died. When he died, because his big push was Made in America. Everything in Walmart was made in the USA when Sam Walton was in charge. When he left and the family took over, the heirs to the throne, or whatever you want to call them, when they took over, that's when it went to hell. By that point in time, that had grown into this mass conglomerate, this monster, this beast that it is now, and that's when they started... you talk about some of Microsoft's tactics sometimes. Listen to how Walmart does. There are vendors that, how a store normally works is they carry as many products as they can so that they can give their customers what they need and what they want and compete on price. Not at Walmart all the time. Things like, for example, a simple example, potato chips, soft drinks, things like that. There is such a premium and demand for Walmart's shelf space. Because there is a limited number of shelf space, even though they're these giant stores, people actually pay Walmart money.
No way.
It put on their shelves so that they can sell their product.
Wow.
They get paid on both ends.
Wow, I did not know that.
I mean, how much more? That's just, you know, that's just, you know, what do you call it? You can't trust Walmart to take care of the customer. You can't trust Walmart to take care of the distributors. What can you trust about Walmart?
Yeah, no doubt. And let me clarify something. I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not going to play self-righteous. I'm not going to act like I'm above all of this. I do occasionally buy items at Walmart, okay? I do go there. A lot of times they do have really good prices on things. I bought my my inverter there, you know? I got a 350-watt inverter at, you know, really a damn good price, you know?
Oh, my camping equipment there.
Yeah, you know, so...
I buy all my Region 1 DVDs there. Those are made in the United States, right?
I don't know.
They can all be used in the United States, but I won't.
That is funny. So... All right, sorry. That's my little rant about Walmart. I just think it's freaking weird. It is just really weird. Okay. That's all retail hacking. I've got one... Well, I'll tell you what. Let's throw it to Stank. We've got about 10 minutes. We're actually recording... It is Wednesday night right now. It's about 15 minutes, so I have to start streaming. And it's going to take about 7 to convert the show. So we got some time. Just about 10 minutes. A little under 10 minutes. Stank actually went to... Well, Stank, why don't you tell everybody what you did?
Well, I'll try to encapsulate this, but some of the people on the board know that I spent yesterday, Tuesday, going to the Microsoft Server, Windows Server 2000 launch and Microsoft Visual Studio .NET launch. So I got my weekly fill of Microsoft propaganda all in one serving, one single serving.
Yes!
Actually, I went there and they had, first of all, it was very very well done as far as very professional, I don't know what the word is, lots of free shit. They provided meals. They provided drinks all day long. There was definitely a lot of money spent, and this was just at one local location, and this happened simultaneously in many places around the world.
Well, that's because if you tell five people to buy their product, they just made about $8,000 or more.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I mean, you know they've got money to spend on this kind of stuff, so... they had three tracks going on. They had a vendor area, a very small vendor area, maybe, I don't know, 10 or 15 booths or something like that. Mostly of course, certified Microsoft partners and stuff from the local area. And that really didn't do a whole lot for me. There really wasn't much there interesting. But they had three different tracks this time. Now, all the other launches I went to were for an individual product. So this one was actually two products. And they actually had three separate tracks. I don't remember the other. There was a systems track, which was the introduction and explanation of some of the features of Windows Server 2003. There was another track. I don't remember what they called it. I think it was called something like applications track or something like that, where it's more about configuring and setting up services and applications and networking and stuff like that under Server 2000. But what I went to was the .NET part of it, which was the developer's track. So a couple of interesting things I found, and, you know, without spending too much time on this, I have to admit that there are some things that I like about Microsoft. I'm not ashamed or afraid to admit that. Microsoft is good at some things, and they're complete, absolute evil dickheads about other things. But Microsoft.NET... The Microsoft.NET architecture, which is what they explained a lot of this time, made some big steps in Microsoft-related products. Specifically, with this new package, with this new suite, you can have much more control over cross-platform developing. When you develop and write your program in C++ or whatever, actually they really, of course, pimped that C# and J#, which is their versions. They really stayed away from some of the others, and Visual Basic, of course. But when you program something in these things now, it was always a pain to try to port these to other things, to try to port this over to work on Windows CE or Pocket PC or something like that, or to run on like an old 9X version or something like that. What they've done now is with this new architecture, they're using a lot of global calls, and they're using a lot of substitute code, I guess you can say, on the compile process. You can compile that code without changing libraries and changing function names and function calls. What they've done is added a step in the compile where you can compile it for different platforms. So if you write your little, I don't know, solitaire game or your little clock or whatever it is you want to develop, your little, you know, solitaire, we'll say, you can compile that for your native, you know, say, Windows 2003 server, which you just bought, of course, or you wanted to make it for a Pocket PC, or even you can do the same thing with the Java. You can compile this to run on cell phones, which just kind of segues back to what we were talking about earlier. You can write your solitaire game and have it run on that platform, but you can also compile it and have it run on Java-supported cell phones and things like that. So
nice.
Are making advances on that front, but not cross-platform, unfortunately, to Unix and to Macintosh and to other environments out there. And frankly, it's Microsoft, and I don't think anybody really is surprised at that.
If I could jump in for a second, the .NET, the thing that .NET really is, I mean, it does provide benefits to Microsoft customers, but it's also something that takes you only into the Microsoft world and pulls people away from any other alternatives. And that's why I'm not really excited about .NET. A lot of people fear it. They call it evil because it's something, like you said, they want you to use their programming languages. That's another thing that anybody that sets the standards, whoever sets the standards is the one that's in control. It's not about who has the most market share. It's about who sets the standards, and then actually you'll end up having the most market share in the end. And this is a brand new standard, a new tactic of Microsoft, I believe, and a lot of others believe, is to draw more people into it, like the Microsoft Passport thing, to draw people into using this, and it can be spread out amongst all of their systems, and nobody else has access to it but people that are supporting Microsoft. And that's another thing that kind of turns me off.
Well, and that's exactly why I ended and said no one is surprised at that. Everybody knows that that's the way they handle things, and that's the way they do their business. They always have, and they always will. And if they can't create the standard, like you said, they will buy the other person's standard or take the other person's standard, because I'm sorry, but to this day, I still say that, well, you could really argue Mosaic or even earlier, but Netscape set the standard for browsers, for an internet browser, for browsing the World Wide Web.
Yeah.
And Microsoft came along, they saw what was coming, and they developed Internet Explorer, and they forced it down your throat. And yes, they got sued for it, they went to court, they dragged it out so long that, oops, suddenly we have the market share. Well, how did that happen? We didn't see that coming.
Yep.
Bullshit, come on.
Well, I do want to say one positive thing about Windows 2003 Server. What they did do when they were developing the kernel in IIS6, they did hire an outside group of hackers or security specialists to come in and take a look at the code level. Not a lot of people get to do that because it's closed source. They did look at the code level, and they were able to find quite a few bugs, and I was happy that they went about doing that. I read in this one article that they did say that in the Unix Linux world, there's something that Windows can't do, which is to be more modular, where you can say, I only want these services to run. And they also went on to saying that possibly in the future that Windows may be like that, but I do want to congratulate them on actually putting a security initiative in to go over and mull over their code for their kernel on IIS, and they said they did fix a lot of bugs, because I know that people are just sick and tired of running IIS and most Microsoft server services. So I'm actually happy that they did that.
Yeah, you know, and that's something else they mentioned about the .NET, the new .NET package, is they're going back to the old scheme, and this is a sign of what you said. They're going back to the old scheme where instead of when you develop and write your package and you have all these DLLs and you have registry entries and you got shit scattered everywhere because it's so integrated and it's so all tied together, and with the new one, they're going away from that, and you can actually develop, write, and create your compiled program, your EXE, your data files, whatever, and you can very simply grab those files from the folder and give them to someone, and they will work. There's no more of these lengthy compiles and tie-ins and pulling stuff from here and there, and then you have to make sure your clients have the proper DLL for this and the proper... It packages all that in the same directory, so it's much easier to distribute, which, as you were just saying about the kernel, you say they're going in that direction. Well, this is one sign of it with their development tools. So in the future, if they're doing that themselves, using their own development tools, which I'm sure they do quite a bit, that could be a sign that they're going into the future, too. Also, just a little bit of conspiracy note here. Perhaps those hackers that were
Make
working on the kernel code are the ones that might have something to do with that leaked key generator that snuck out before 2000 server ever reached the store shelf.
Oddly.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah, can't believe that happened. Can I tell you something, guys? I was just, like, I was disembodied from the show just now, just listening. I was somebody just checking out the show. That was so much fun, man. I was just kicking back listening. That was great.
Let me drop one more bit of news before, I know we're cutting close.
It better be damn quick.
It's very fast. Tomorrow, Thursday, the 8th, this is going to be going on down in Fort Lauderdale at Nova Southeast University. I'm giving some equal time here. There's a live on-stage debate, Windows versus Linux.
Ooh.
As Microsoft is in town for what I just talked about, I assume they timed it like this. Microsoft Corporation and two other companies in Fort Lauderdale area, South Florida area, will be debating with representatives from Red Hat Corporation and a couple other Linux-based companies in the area. So I'm going to try my best to head there. I'm really getting a lot of work. I'm getting ass rammed, as Mute would say. So I'm really going to try my best to get down there tomorrow after work, and I'm going to try to record it if they will let me.
Yeah, try it.
That could be very good, and I will at least post notes. If I can't take video, I'll at least post a summary in the forums.
Yeah,
so everybody know ahead of
get
time recording.
What's that?
Let them know ahead of time that you're recording.
Of course, yes. Make sure you get consent. Yeah, get some info and heckle them. Slip, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I can't thank you enough. Go check out his show, In the Now, at slipnet.org. Good stuff. You can also get it at oldschoolfreak.com. Stank, thanks for being on the show. Next week, everybody, check out the new segment. I want to give some shouts to Mute, shouts to Screamer, late.